So if it's going to rain and you can't get outside and do some work, here's something you can do this evening.
Yeah.
You can go to the Marshall Lyon County Library and hear a very interesting author that is visiting from Belgium. She is here with us this morning, Annie Provost.
Yeah.
Did I say that right, Dan?
Yes, Anna Provost. Yeah, no. Oh, it doesn't matter.
It's nice to have you with us. And she is an author from Belgium, has written a number of books. And her latest book is the one she's talking about and working on. And we are going to talk about that today. And it's called Children of the Iser. And this book will be coming out soon, correct?
Not very soon.
Not very soon, but
sometime.
Yeah. the story behind it is what you're mainly here touring and talking about. And she was at the Cottonwood Library last night, and it's really a little known story, not only in this country but also in your own country, about the evacuation of anywhere from 11,000 to 16,000 children during World War I. One of those children was your grandmother.
Right.
And it's just a fascinating story. So, Annie, first we want to hear about you, though. Tell us a little bit of your background. And I understand you used to live in Minnesota. You have relatives here in this area. And it's just kind of a nice little trip back home for you right now.
Yeah. We lived here. We lived in Minnesota 30 years ago, my husband and I. So he's here with me as well now today. Why did we come here? Because he studied at the U of M.
Okay.
And I came with him, and the moment that we told my parents that we were coming to Minnesota, my mom immediately said, oh, that's where all our relatives live, because my mom is a Luwachi. And for the people from the area, this name will probably ring like a bell, because there's quite a few here. Because the oldest brother of my grandfather immigrated to United States in the year 10. And he had a lot of children here, as we all know. But we're the other side, you know, we're the youngest brother of a family of 10. And he had a lot of children in Belgium as well. So I have a lot of Luwachi cousins at home, but I also have a lot of second cousins here. And then when we came here, that's the first thing we did. You know, these people were sent a letter at that time, you know, 30 years ago, no emails.
Right.
To let us know that, to let them know that we were coming, and we were very well received here, and it felt like, you know, every Thanksgiving and Christmas, I never felt I wasn't home, because I always got plenty of invitations to be amongst family members. So we have these great memories of living here. And then when I started to do research on my grandmother, who was the spouse, the wife of this little brother that stayed in Belgium, there was missing links, so I got in touch with the family again, and I asked them, you know, how did you hear this story? Because this is all 100 years ago, so I have to ask the next generation.
Right.
The first generation has died. They can't talk to me anymore. And that brought me the idea that since I was going to come to the States anyways, because my husband and I wanted to be back here after 30 years, that I should come to Marshall and get in touch and ask them, you know, shall we talk to the family about this quite interesting story, a very sad story of the past, and see if that still has echoes here.
Okay.
So that's what I've been doing yesterday night in the Library of Cottonwood, and I will do it again tonight. I've done this quite a few times in my birthplace, you know, in the little corner of Belgium that was never occupied by the Germans, and where this story, we're talking First World War, took place. And it's been very rewarding for me, because even though people say that they don't remember and that nobody talked about it, if you yourself start to tell the story, all memories are coming back. So people always underestimate what they know, because they don't have the bigger frame, they don't have the bigger picture. But if you offer them the bigger picture, like I tell them what the decisions were of our government and what they decided to do with the children who were in the fire line, literally.
Yes.
People will come back to me and they say, oh, yes, now I remember. My mom said this and this and this. And now I understand what she meant, because people would have heard things, but they couldn't. They couldn't put it in place, and that shows me how important storytelling is. It does revive the memory. It just brings back memories that people thought they'd forgotten, but they haven't.
So First World War, you know, Belgium was invaded by the Germans. And so there was all these children who were literally, as you said, in the war zone. So the Belgian government decided to evacuate them. So they were taken to northern France, various places, boarding schools, monasteries, wherever. And they were there for many years. And one of those children was your grandmother, Anna van der Waal.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this is just a fascinating time period, of course. And as we celebrate the 100th anniversary, or 100, yeah,
yeah,
the 100th
100, yeah.
anniversary, these stories are coming forward. And as you said, once they put it in context, they realize, oh my goodness.
Yeah. Many people in Belgium have the memory. I mean, I even grew up with the idea that every grandparent had been evacuated. Mm-hmm. These schools that they were brought to were called the colonies. And nobody ever talked about it because it was so normal. You know, it's like
sure.
the fish don't talk about the water they're swimming in. Mm-hmm. But it's only by bringing it up to many people that they all come to me and they say, oh, my grandmother was in a colony. Now, we think there was over 150. Okay. So the people really don't remember which one their parents went to. But what is interesting about these colonies is that it was an evacuation of children without their parents. Their parents were alive.
Mm-hmm.
The parents were in the front zone, but they were all farmers. And we know how farmers are. You know, you can't just tell a farmer, hey, it's getting dangerous here. The Germans are approaching. You better run. They will run if they see the danger, but as long as they don't visually see the danger, they would leave everything behind. It's not like somebody in the city who can take his money that is in his mm-hmm. pocket and go. A farmer's wealth is on his fields. It's in his barns. So he knows if I flee, I will not be able to feed my children. And usually that was a lot of children because mm-hmm. they had 10 and more. My grandparents had 12 children.
Okay.
So they stayed. And in a way, they stayed too long. They stayed till it got really dangerous. And the danger that made my great-grandparents flee was very simple. It was the first chemical gas attack in history.
Okay.
Because my grandmother lived in the village where the Germans for the first time threw chloride gas to the soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
But the citizens could actually see it approach from over the water, and they could see the yellow cloud, and they could feel it really stung their throats and it made their eyes tear. And my grandmother has always told the story of them seeing the soldiers that were living with them, because all the farms were had at least 50 soldiers staying with them,
mm-hmm.
that they came running and then they died on the farm.
Okay.
And that's when the parents decided that they had to flee with their children. And that's when they went, but they didn't want to cross the French border, even though they were really at the corner. So they fled to the last village before the French border. Because, of course, at that time, if you had to cross a border, you were nobody, because you didn't speak the language. These were all Flemish-speaking people. Even the pocket money you had with you wasn't worth a thing. And you didn't know how you would feed your 12 children mm-hmm. in a foreign country. So they stayed in that little corner of Belgium that was never conquered because, of, as many people will know, it was the river Iser, hence the name, the children of the Iser. It was the river Iser that was flooded. You know, they let the seawater come into the country. And that's what stopped the Germans. So everybody who was on the left bank of that river was so-called safe. But it meant that in that little corner of Belgium that was only 50 villages big, there was 1 million refugees.
Oh my.
And they all had to cross the border at some point. And because it was so dangerous for the children to be there, because they were throwing gas, they were throwing bombs, there was shrapnel everywhere, and there was the fear of gas, and there was the fear of infections, because there were so many people together there. People were dying like flies of typhus,
mm-hmm.
that the Belgian government decided that if the parents weren't willing to let to go to France, they would take the children and sort of force them almost, because in the beginning it wasn't by force that they had to leave. My grandmother was on the very first convoy.
And she was 8 years old at the
time? She was nine by then, because
okay.
the war had been going on for a year. My grandfather, the man she married to 15 years later was on that same train. That was the Luwachi that we're talking about, right?
So, did they meet on the train?
We think they knew each other because the first address they fled to was their farm. So before the farmers were in the same village, and then the Luwachi family had moved in the year 10, the same year that Hector Luwachi came to Minnesota. They'd moved two villages, but they still knew each other. So they must have known each other as children. Mm-hmm. But then when they brought to the colonies, that's one of the sad sides of this story, is that following the morale of that time, all the girls and the boys were separated. Mm-hmm. So the first thing she lost was her brothers because they were brought to a different school. And the parents probably knew that, but they all thought it was for a few months because, and they all were worried that their children, that the war had been going on for 9 months already, mm-hmm. and the children weren't going to school anymore. What did they do? They were hanging around with the soldiers who were on all the farms, and they were learning to swear, and they were learning to drink whiskey, and they were learning to smoke. But they weren't learning any writing and reading and counting. Mm-hmm. So both the parents and the government was really worried about the becoming wild of the children. Mm-hmm. We have a very nice Dutch word for that, you know, verwildering. It's like they turn into animals. And that's why they took the children away. And of course, we have to remember, because this took me ages to understand why you would do that as a parent. You know, in a mm-hmm. wartime, the last thing you'd want to do is be separated from your children.
Right. Yeah.
But it took me a while to understand that there was this, you know, this conviction or sure, you know, people were sure, certain that the war would not last very long because they couldn't imagine that it would be a 4-year war. Mm-hmm. So they were convinced that these children would be back in 6 months or less, maybe, that they would just go there for the winter and that would be take off the strain of the parents, but they would come back and at least they would have repeated everything they had learned in school before. Mm-hmm. And the law that forced children to go to school had only been signed 2 months before the war started.
Prior
to that, there wasn't. But it was like the first year that everybody had good intentions that all the children in Belgium would go to school. And then the war came. So the minds were very ready to educate the children. Mm-hmm. But it was just crossed by the war. And I think this consciousness in parents, I mean, parents' minds had been prepared of how important it was also for farmers' children, because how would they be a good farmer if they couldn't calculate or they couldn't write? So I think that all explains why these parents just, they sent their children, they said goodbye, they brought them to the train, and then they were driven off. And you know, what is interesting is that I found the diaries of the nuns, because they went with Belgian nuns, because of course the parents didn't want them to become French. That was the horror. Mm-hmm. Because first of all, France was known to be a, you know, frivolous country. And, you know, they weren't sure they would come back very Catholic, because that was another worry of the parents. France had just passed the law of separation between church and state. So, but that also helped the children because of that new law in France. There were many, many buildings that were empty because the religious people couldn't teach the children anymore. Mm-hmm. So there were all these empty buildings and these children coming in together with their nuns. In order for them not to become French, they had to get classes in their own language, because of course the parents didn't want the children to come back home and not understand their own parents anymore. Mm-hmm. So these were little enclaves, you know, that's why we call them colonies. They were like little pieces of Belgium placed in France in order to keep these children Belgium, so to make sure that they would come back. Because why? They were considered the future of Belgium. They were the hope of Belgium, because everybody knew that if this war was over, it was that generation who would have to reconstruct that completely destroyed country. Mm-hmm. So they really wanted to invest in those children. But the outcome was that these children were in a gated school for 4 years, and that they were actually completely alienated from their parents, because the story that I always heard is that my grandmother came home together with her sisters, and she came on the farm. It was a new farm because the old farm was completely destroyed. And there was a lot of people on one farm because so many people lost their farms that they were all waiting for the reconstruction in order to go back to that area that was full of dead bodies and full of mines and full of bombs. They couldn't farm there. And my grandmother and her sisters were just walking past their mother and they said, "Where is mother?" And the story goes, they didn't recognize their mother because she had completely turned gray over the war. Mm-hmm. And then our family story continues and it says, but Marie-Louise, who was the mother, recognized her children very well because they hadn't grown an inch. And that's what got into my family tradition, is that they were gone for 4 years. They were saved by the Belgian governments and by the nuns, but they were hungry, they were craving, they had, you know, they had bad memories to looking back at the colony. And I see that in all the second generation people, like the generation of my parents, they have heard the stories of the different colonies all over France, and the same things always come back, like we were hungry, we were punished for stealing an apple from the kitchen, we only got half an egg in 4 years' time. We were picking our position in the queue because we knew if we could get the corner of the bread, it was a bit thicker than the other pieces of bread we were getting. Children are dying in my class, is what my grandmother kept saying. There was 5 children that died in the course of these 4 years that were in her class. So that must have had an enormous impact on the children. But see, the question I'm of course stuck with is, you know, were they mistreated? Is it true that she had to eat beans every day? I think if a child comes home and it has been extremely homesick, it's in the way it gives a report of what happened, it will also start to color and change the things. You know, mm-hmm. if you feed a child like 300 days a year beans and then maybe a few treats every year, they will probably remember the beans more than all the rest.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting story, only of what happened, but also about how our memory works and how trauma is digested or mm-hmm. what people do to pick up their lives after they've been separated for a far too long time, because all these children did was longing to go home. And even the nuns promised them all the time, you know, and by Christmas you'll be home, or by the summertime, or the next mm-hmm. time the school year has ended, you'll be home. And it just never materialized.
The one thing, though, the other side of it is they did live through the war. And I imagine there were many of those children who came home and their parents were gone.
Yes.
Their parents had perished during the war.
We actually have stories. My grandmother didn't just go with her 2 sisters and her 2 brothers, but she also went with, on the whole, there was 15 Van der Waals on that train.
Okay.
So she had several first cousins there. And we have a horrible story. I mean, all the letters have been kept from that family. We don't have letters in our own family. But that family of her first cousins, we have all the letters, and there it's absolutely cruel, because there's the father, he goes to milk the cow and there's a bomb falling right next to him. He loses his arm. He almost dies. They don't dare to tell the children that, but they send the children letters saying that they have to pray for something horrible that happened at home. So the children are just at a loss, praying for not knowing what. Mm-hmm. And then 2 months later, their mom goes to milk the same cow, and she thinks, I'll be careful. I'm not going to do it outside because the bombs are always falling. So she does it in the barn, but the bomb falls right next to the barn and goes through the wall and hits her in the skull. Mm-hmm. And she's been alive for 2 days. And in the letters, it says literally that the letters that the sisters, her generation, are sending each other, because they wouldn't tell the children that her brain was hanging out of her skull, you know. But she still lived for 2 hours. And they lost her after 2 days. So these are the horrible stories of things happening mm-hmm. at home. So indeed, they have been saved by going away.
Yes, although it was, I'm sure, just, and it probably affected them the rest of their life too.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's a fascinating story, a piece of history that, you know, we of course have never heard here in the United States, and now you're starting to hear more and more in your country as you research this. And you know, I know you've made some television documentaries about this mm-hmm. and other topics, but you are going to be at the Marshall Lyon County Library tonight, ready to talk about this and many other topics. And it's just fascinating. And then the connection between you and the Lawajis is great, too, for this part of the state. Yes. And so people can come and meet you and your husband. I imagine he'll be there. And who knows, you might even have a few local relatives there, too.
Oh, well, let's hope, yeah.
It's great. It's wonderful having you on with us. And I know you've written other books as well. So if you want to, do you have a website or something? Or is there an area that people can go to and do a little research before tonight?
Sure, yeah. There's quite a bit on my website on this story. It's called Children of the Iser. But if you just Google my name, you will find my website. And then you just have to continue clicking till you find the Children of the Iser. And you can see the documentary there. It's in Dutch, though, but yeah.
Okay. And Iser is Y-S-E-R. Annie, A-N-N-E-P-R-O-V-O-O-S-T. Double O. Oh, it's been so fun having you with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome to Marshall and welcome to Southwest Minnesota. And after you're done with your appearance tonight, where do you go on to next?
We're going back to the Twin Cities where we're staying with friends. And then after that, we're going to go to Chicago where our daughter is studying this school year.
So very good.
She's at the University of Chicago. So we're going to go to her convocation.
Oh, very nice. Well, it's great to have you with us. We encourage everyone, 6:30 tonight, Marshall Lyon County Library, there in the big community room, a chance to hear this story, to meet Ani, and find out all about this little piece of history that has quite a connection, actually, here to Southwest Minnesota. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
You could have slept in after your appearance last night, which went kind of was an extended appearance.
Yes,
you were amazed by that, weren't you?
Yes, people were so interested. Yeah.
Very good. So 6:30 tonight, the Marshall Lyon County Library.